is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
All right, welcome to the show. This is Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg here, as always, with David O'Mill. This was actually one of the more interesting games of the season. The Miami Heat beating the Washington Wizards 112-101, improving to 8-17 on the season. The Heat have now swept the Wizards this season so far. But like I was saying, this was actually... I think you and I had talked about, what was it, after the Hawks game, I think, where we were like, oh my god, like, the only reason we would watch that game is because we had to. This was probably the best, one of the better games of the night, and one of the rare, actually just interesting, good basketball games of the season for the Heat.
Yeah, and moreover, the fact that they were able to do it at home, you know, I think they showed during the broadcast, Eric Spoelstra talking before the game about the fact that Miami's been able to have a higher level of energy when they've been traveling. Obviously, that hasn't been evident during the three-game road trip. But, you know, for the most part, they've been better at, you know, on road games than they have at home. But tonight they were able to match some of that high energy. And that's been a recurring theme in our discussions of late. The fact that, you know, we haven't seen much effort from guys like Whiteside and others. And, you know, obviously the injuries have taken their toll. But tonight was a night where they kind of flipped the switch a little bit. And they were actually able to come out with some real nice energy and close out with that as well.
Yeah, I love the intensity from the team everywhere. They seem to have... They were following the lead of Goran Dragic, of James Johnson, all guys that we want to talk about a little bit later. This was a game of runs for the most part. You know, the Wizards would get out to an 8-point lead. The Heat would get out to a 6-7-8-point lead, and so on and so forth. And the Miami ended up getting the last run and ended up blowing the game open in the fourth quarter. And it was a situation where, you know, it was a close game in the first half. And the Heat had shot 51% in the first half. And I thought that would be a regression because Miami doesn't shoot 51%. And I thought there would be a regression, and there wasn't a regression. They shot 51% in the game. So they kept shooting at that rate, which we can't expect every night. But when the ball – I thought that it wasn't just dumb luck either. I thought the ball was moving really crisp. I thought Josh McRoberts being in that starting unit, he helped the ball movement a lot. Goran Dragic was as aggressive as ever. He was helping everything, so I thought a lot of the guys were on the same page. They all were all really aggressive, and the defense started to get better as the game went on.
25 assists on 45 made field goals, so not a huge, you know, not an incredible mark there, but you know, obviously they were, as you pointed out, swinging the ball well. But I really liked the energy, particularly early on when it came to their rebounding. They obliterated Washington in the rebound battle. 47 total rebounds to just 36 for the Wizards. And they led with 11 offensive rebounds to just 9 for Washington. So they were engaged in that regard. Whiteside led all rebounders, obviously, with 16. He was impressive. But early on, again, in that first quarter, you saw the first couple of plays as I was watching it. It really set the tone, I think. And you don't want to ever just look at that because, obviously, it's a 48-minute game and whatnot. But they were chasing after loose balls, creating multiple opportunities. They weren't even knocking down those particular shots, but the fact that they were going after it, maybe that was something that was really helping them to kind of figure out, hey, look, you know, we can do this despite the injuries, despite everything that's affecting this team. They seemed more willing and engaged than we've seen from them in the past few games. And so that was a really good sign. And like you said, it did continue all the way through. There were, you know, there were moments here and there, particularly when Goran Dragic got into some early foul trouble there in the third quarter. And, you know, they looked a little lackluster at times. But for the most part, I think their energy level was consistently high. And you know, Washington just couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah, Dragic got that technical foul at the end of the game for a shove on either Bradley Beal or Kelly Oubre. I'm not sure which kind of shove that they called him on, and probably the Oubre one.
It was the Oubre one, yeah. And it was an interesting one. I really like that play because it's a side of Dragic that we haven't seen. You know, we've talked about in the past that he doesn't get a lot of respect from referees, but there was a point there when I think it was a Miami shot caromed off the rim. Wayne Ellington corralled it, and I'm trying to remember who it was. I guess it was Beal who dove to the floor to try and dislodge the ball. And then they called a foul on Beal. But in the meantime, Oubre, sliding along the baseline, he was right there along the edge of the painted area. He went to go after the ball after they had already called the foul on Beal. And then Dragic kind of dove in there and shoved Oubre out of the way. That's the second time I saw Oubre getting pushed out of the way. So despite his height advantage over Dragic, he doesn't have the leg strength either. And he got shoved right out of there. And unfortunately for Dragic, he had his leg tangled up in such a way with Oubre. That's what caused him to fall like that. And they got tangled up, and then Oubre shoved him on the ground. And then when Dragic got up, of course, being separated by James Johnson, they kind of jotted each other. But Dragic didn't back down, and you heard the AAA crowd really cheering it. It was a really exciting moment, you know, kind of rallying behind a guy that, I mean, you know, hasn't always had the support, I think, especially from local fans and Nationals fans as well. But it was great to see him, you know, kind of saying, you know what, you're not going to intimidate me despite the 8-inch height advantage. I'm going to step to you and I'm going to hold my ground. That was a good moment for him.
The game was also played at a really fast pace. The pace here is 100.7, which is one of the fastest games that you've played in almost four full more possessions per 48 minutes than their pace. This season. Yeah, their average pace this season. So just a really, again, just an entertaining game. It was a lot of fun to watch. And if you enjoy watching games, basketball games, how's this for a segue? SeatGeek is the smartest way to enjoy watching games in person. It's the easiest way to find tickets for any NBA or Miami Heat game that you want to see up close. This season, there's nothing like being in the arena for the biggest moments of the year. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats that you want for great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats for this weekend or any game this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Pricing can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. It does it by just putting up a big green dot. It's just color-coded. It's like when you were in kindergarten and you just like had to color in the boxes, you know?
I skipped kindergarten, actually.
Oh, well, you're very smart. But it's you know, just big green dot. You click on that, and you're like, okay, there you go. Spend money on this one. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every SeatGeek ticket is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. That's the big green dot I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee. No fakes. So you can shop for tickets with confidence. Best of all, Locked On Heat listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. How do you do that? Download the SeatGeek app. Go to the Settings tab. Click Add a Promo Code. Enter the promo code LOHEAT, that's LOHEAT, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. That's enough for a slice of pizza and a beer at the game. Download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LOHEAT today, get you $20 after. All right.
Maybe your girlfriend can use that to get Hamilton tickets.
We're going to need that $20 off, that's for sure.
Yeah, 500 minus 20. I mean that's a bargain right there.
The listeners may not care, but my girlfriend right now is in line online for Hamilton tickets.
In line
online.
The virtual in line. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's probably just got a glass of wine just sitting there. Whatever.
I think you need more than a glass if you're starting to get Hamilton tickets for that price. But you know, that $20 from
probably got the whole bottle in front of her, and she's just to make sure she doesn't feel like, you know, an alcoholic. She pours it into the glass and then just chugs it and then pours another. And then, anyway, yeah, she's online for Hamilton tickets because they're coming to San Francisco. And she texted me before we started recording that. She's like, would you pay $584 for a ticket to see Hamilton? I was like, no. No.
I hope she's using SeatGeek.
She ought to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Back to the game.
I'm all stressed out. So back to the game. This is now I'm not stressed out. Goran Dragic, 34 points, his highest ever in a Miami Heat uniform. 23 field goal attempts, the most field goal attempts ever in a Miami Heat uniform for Gorin.
Yeah.
Loved his game tonight.
Yeah, he was absolutely sensational. I mean, early on, you could tell that he was kind of being aggressive with his shot, and despite the foul trouble, look, it's, you know, John Wall he was defending, and that's quite a load to deal with.
Absolutely.
So it was, you know, obvious that he was going to get into foul trouble throughout various points of the night, and sure enough, it happened. But despite that, whenever he was in, it absolutely changed the tempo of the Heat. They were much more aggressive when he was in there. It was a dramatic difference when he was out of the game. But he, you know, he was really effective overall. Let me see here, 2 of 5 from 3-point range. Not great, but you know, enough and to really make a difference when those shots came in. And also, you know, he really hit them at really opportune moments. 14 made field goals. That's impressive. And look, only 5 assists for a guy that passes, you know, a little bit more frequently than Dragic does. He was actively looking for a shot, and you could tell that. But he was aggressive, following the little scrum with Oubre. It looked like he was, you know, had a little edge to him, and he really hit a couple of shots there in clutch moments that really helped separate Miami from Washington late in the game. And I think that was a huge difference for him. Like, he had sat out practically all of the third quarter, from what I'm seeing here. Yeah, he picked up his 4th foul with 10 minutes and 28 seconds left in the third. So he was taken out almost immediately after halftime. And it was really unfortunate because, like I said, he was a huge difference maker in their offense. And
he was able to play almost the entire fourth quarter. So that was almost the benefit of that, right? Because Dragic, he ended up scoring 13 points in the fourth quarter. And we've talked about this whole season, who's the guy that's going to step up in the fourth for the Heat? Right. And for the most part, it was Dragic. And another guy who did step up was James Johnson. I do want to talk to him about him in a little bit. But Dragic, 13 points in the fourth quarter. So he enters the fourth quarter with 21, finishes with 34. I mean, that's exactly what the Heat need from that guy. And I'm okay with him only getting 5 assists. It's about 2.
Oh yeah.
2 assists shy of his average, right? And it's like, well, because he was feeling it tonight. And you mentioned going against John Wall. I do want to compare stats briefly, because a lot of people look at John Wall. A lot of Heat fans look at John Wall as unhappy in Washington. As a trade option. I mean, he scores 30 points on 12 of 26 field goals, made 1 of his 5 3-pointers, 6 rebounds, 8 assists, and 4 turnovers. Dragic, 34 points, 14 of 23 compared to Wall's 12 of 26, made 2 of his 5 3-pointers, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and only had 3 turnovers. So outplayed Wall while having to defend John Wall. I thought that was obviously a very great all-around performance by Dragic. And now, probably as Heat fans thinking, you know what? Whatever it would have taken to get John Wall, if it would have taken Goran Dragic and Justice Winslow to get John Wall...
Not worth it.
Not worth it.
And I wonder, though. I don't know if that's actually going to be the case, because I think, you know, there's a tendency amongst Heat fans, given the success of the last 21 years of Pat Riley's tenure, to attract and lure and acquire big names, either via trades or free agency. And so clearly John Wall is a bigger name. And I think if you asked NBA fans across the country or the world whether or not John Wall is a better player, I think most people would probably agree that's the case. But you know, he does show different flashes of athleticism than Dragic. But there's just, I mean, to me, again, I've really enjoyed appreciating Dragic this season, the nuances of his games, the way he absorbs and sometimes forces contact when he's driving to the hoop. His downhill game has been more aggressive than I've ever seen it. I think he's been sensational. I think his shooting has been a real plus this season. And again, you know, it's tough to focus on positives or to harp on those and focus on individual, you know, things like this in the midst of team or lack of team success. But you know, I think he's been a real plus for the team. And it's interesting. I wound up doing the same thing that you were just pointing out, looking at Wall and wondering, is this the guy that Miami is going to target? But then the other guy that I was actually looking at, Bradley Beal, he had a huge game for Washington, 29 points, 11 of 20 overall, just 2 of 8 from 3-point range. But I mean, he looked like he was really aggressive, come back from injury, I think. And obviously that's the concern, but I think that was a name that a lot of people in Miami were also interested in. Obviously he fills a hole at the shooting guard position. Sure. So I don't know what it would take to acquire a guy like him. And I don't know if there'd be any, but you know, obviously there's been some reported tension that's probably been a little exaggerated between him and Wall. And you wonder whether or not in the midst of a losing season, whether or not it's better for them to kind of part ways with him or something like that. He did play at the University of Florida, even though I think they mentioned he was from St. Louis. So it's not like he's a local kid or anything like that, but he might be willing to find a, you know, greener pastures.
It would require Miami and Washington to work out a trade, and they're in the same division. division. I don't know how much they're going to be switching stars. Like, would they trade Whiteside for Beal or something like that? Like, I don't see something like that happening. But I do. To go back to Dragic, though, one of the things I noticed, two things really. The first one, in the first quarter, I thought both teams really exchanged blows a lot. It ended up being, I think, Washington led. I have it right here. Washington led the first quarter 29-28 after the first quarter.
All right.
So really just a very, very close game in that first period. Both teams really kind of switching blows. I thought Washington's offense was better than Miami's offense, but Miami was better defensively. They were a little bit more balanced. Mm-hmm. But the pace automatically started in that first period with both teams kind of they would score, and then the other team would just get down the court really quick and either score in like semi-transition or even after a made basket, the other team would go down the other side of the floor really quickly, almost like the defense would break down. Right. And the other side would get there. And I think, you know, the pace started picking up that way, and you could see Dragic starting to pick up his game because he was really effective throughout the whole game. It wasn't like he just was great in the fourth quarter or whatever. Like, he was really effective in the first half, you know, got a big part of those 21 points. He finished with 18 points in the first half, so he had a really great first half. And you can kind of see him getting going early because he looked at that and he was like, oh, this is how that game's going to be played. And I thought he kind of got going, and that's kind of what got him to get aggressive. That was the first part. The second part was in the fourth quarter when Whiteside sat out. Willie Reed didn't have a great game. I think the Heat have basically decided that McRoberts is a power forward, at least with the injuries that this team has right now. McRoberts right now is a power forward. So they bring James Johnson in at center. Yeah, because Udonis Haslem wasn't going to be able to play. Haslem wasn't going to be able to play in this game. The game was moving way too fast for him.
Right.
So they put, I think Spoelstra made a great coaching decision by putting James Johnson back at center, something that we saw earlier in the year but haven't seen so much recently. Puts James Johnson back in at center. Super small. And
yeah, Wayne Ellington, Tyler Johnson, Rodney McGruder, and James Johnson. I mean, that's really smallish.
With Dragic. And I thought that really got the pace going as well. And Dragic, this is in the fourth quarter, Dragic got most of his 13 points in that time. I thought, you know, what that allowed the Heat to do is James Johnson was bringing the ball up the floor. And then setting screens and doing all these things. It opened up so much of what they wanted to do offensively and opened up so much space for Goran Dragic. I love the way that the offense worked in that way when they go small with Whiteside off the court. And that's not – I really don't want that to turn into a trade Whiteside thing. I'm just saying, like, if that's going to be in small doses for, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 minutes a game, I'm all in.
Well, look, you know. Obviously, I mean, you don't want to make a comparison because I'm not even doing that. But I mean, worth an example. Everybody talks about Golden State's death lineup from last season and everything else. It's not like that lineup was starting games or anything like that or playing a substantial amount of minutes. It just when Steve Kerr or Luke Walton used it sparingly, it was extremely, extremely effective and nobody had a counter for it.
They played it 10 to 12 minutes a game. It wasn't
the dominant lineup or anything like that. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that we haven't seen, you know, too much from Spoelstra. He was able to mix and match. Again, he hasn't been able to because so many players have been injured. It kind of limits your options when you're going with an 8-man rotation and, you know, three of those players might be playing like garbage that particular night. You know, when you got guys like Babbitt and Derek Williams struggling to hit a shot, there's only so much you can do with them. But I was really interested. I don't know if you noticed this. They were setting screens for James Johnson, not just having him screen, you know, provide the screens, but also screening for him. I saw Goran Dragic do it once, and on the next play, Tyler Johnson did it. And both of them, the first one on the pick and roll situation, James Johnson got to the line. He was fouled at the hoop. And then in the following one, he got a layup. When he came around, Markieff Morris was pitiful in his screen defense, and he stayed with the screener rather than switch on to the roll man. And James Johnson was able to get past him on both occasions to get to the hoop. So it was an interesting play call there. I don't think we'd seen that before, but I might be wrong that I hadn't noticed it prior. But it was a really interesting switch. And again, this is something that we've been missing over the last few games. James Johnson, with his incredible ball handling, his ability to get to the hoop, he finished with a nice dunk at one point, too. I mean, he just added a dynamic that
was missing. He was playing center and then bringing the ball up the court at the beginning of the fourth quarter. I mean, there was one play where he got the rebound, brought the ball up the court, gave it off to, I think, Tyler Johnson, set the screen for Tyler Johnson, rolls to the rim. Tyler passes it to James Johnson. James Johnson finishes at the rim. That's insane. That is so many things that he did. I mean, that's the stuff that you see Draymond Green do. That's the thing that, quite frankly, you see LeBron James do. I know the Miami Herald's Manny Navarro actually tweeted, you know, James Johnson does have a little bit of LeBron in him, for whatever that's worth. And I agree. I think physically they're both very imposing. James Johnson is a black belt. We can't mention that enough. That is very important for basketball players. It's like you can see physically that he can run the floor. He can pound the ball. He can rebound. I mean, he could do – I don't want to say he could do everything because he's a role player, but he's so versatile. He's having the best season of his career in most aspects of the game. Yeah. I really like him, man.
Oh, I found myself thinking the exact same thing. I know we addressed it in a recent – I think it was our last mailbag, not this week but the previous week, when somebody asked us about players that are in short-term deals and who we'd like to add. Obviously, we didn't think that either Deion or Derek Williams would stick around, although Deion does have an option that he can – you know, a player option on his two-year deal. But, you know, obviously Johnson – it has been such a great find, and he's likely to command a lot of money as a free agent, unfortunately, this offseason. Right. But, you know, he's been a great addition. You know, nobody expected this. You know, when you did your podcast weeks ago with the Locked On Raptors team, you know, they obviously didn't expect that to be the case. I don't think anybody did. You know, as much as a cult following that he had with the Raptors, nobody expected him. I think most people thought he was washed.
Toronto would love a player like James Johnson right now.
Yeah. Irony of ironies, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's something. You know, he's just been great. I mean, his versatility. Obviously, we're not comparing him to Draymond Green or, you know, as far as his overall production, but
even though we are a little bit.
There's a benefit of having a guy like that. We haven't had a guy like that since the Big Three. We saw shades of it last season with Luol Deng, and we talked about this in our last podcast. And Mick Roberts is adding that kind of dimension too. Like, you know, seeing them both provide the 1-2 punch, it's a big difference from where we were at the start of the season when the power forward position was arguably our weakest. It might still be the case, but it's getting significantly better, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned McRoberts. We had joked about the power forward belt becoming the power forward participation trophy. And and there is – this is for the first time all season, really. This is our first time that there's a real battle for the power forward belt, James Johnson versus McRoberts. McRoberts had a nice game. And we talked about getting rid of the power forward belt, and you guys did write in. And I think what we're going to decide and is that if there is a change or a noteworthy – thing to talk about, it we'll bring back the belt, but it's probably not going to be a pod to pod basis. It'll be like, okay, so you will carry the belt until somebody grabs it from you, and at which point we will announce it via podcast. But McRoberts, we have a decision to make tonight. McRoberts, 18 minutes, 7 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, just 1 turnover, made 3 of his 8 field goals, hit 1 of his 3 3-pointers. Really good all-around
nice
game
dunk.
For McRoberts. And a nice dunk. I wrote this down because McRoberts got off to a hot start. As well as James Johnson finished the game, McRoberts got off to a really hot start. 6 rebounds in the first 5.5 minutes. Was really helping to move the ball. And 5 assists, a couple of those assists, at least from my own official account, were to Whiteside on the pick and roll. Very valuable assists.
Yes, absolutely. It's tough because, again, you look at the number of minutes and you wonder whether or not if he had played the same amount of time as Johnson, whether or not he would have had, you know, the same kind of production, same kind of numbers. But, you know, obviously we can't make that comparison. But he had a great game. And you start to wonder whether or not he's finally earning the contract that so many players blasted Pat Riley for, or so many fans blasted Riley for over the last couple of seasons, you know. And, you know, this is why perhaps they haven't been able to make a trade. Maybe they did include him in trade talks. Nobody's ever confirmed that, obviously. You know, nobody wanted McRoberts allegedly, but the reality is that the team had faith in him, you know, when they first signed him, and they thought he was going to be the kind of player that we're finally starting to see. And he's made a huge impact. I mean, it just adds another dimension that's been missing. And I think, you know, we saw that tonight, his rebounding, his length, he was able to guard bigger players. He switched onto, you know, the Markieff Morris. He was also guarding Gortat at times. I saw him switching on to smaller guards. He doesn't have that kind of mobility where you do it up, and he's not Kawhi Leonard. But by the same token, he's not bad overall. I think we've seen some plus things from him. And offensively, he's just, again, been a spark.
Any other notes before we wrap this thing up?
No, I think that pretty much sums it up. I was concerned because Wayne Ellington looks like he's taking a little bit of a step back. And you know, we talked about it when he first started getting hot and hitting those three-point shots, that the spacing that he provides, the threat of a three-pointer provides more value sometimes than the three-pointer itself. So I'm not down on Ellington just yet, but it's clear that he's kind of forcing it a little bit. You know, some of those shots were at the end of the shot clock and he kind of had to hoist them up, being Miami's best shooter on the floor. But 2 of 9 from three-point range, 3 of 11 overall for 11 points.
I will say this about Ellington, though. He did, yes, you're right. He struggled 2 of 9 from three-point range. But he did get 5 assists and he had 2 steals in the game.
Yeah.
I thought he made a very positive impact outside of not shooting well. And he's got the green light. And look, I mean, this isn't Steph Curry, it's not Klay Thompson, it's not Ray Allen that we're talking about. This is Wayne Ellington. I mean, he's a journeyman for a reason, and he's right. Not going to be hot every night, but he is still one of Miami's best three-point shooters, if not their best three-point shooter. He still provides a ton of spacing. I thought that they didn't really get him the ball in great spots. I thought his first three-pointer was kind of out of rhythm. I thought there was a number of times where maybe Dragic didn't, not to take anything away from Dragic's game, well, there's a few drive and kick passes that I noticed that were a little low for Ellington. And he put them up anyway because he's got that green light. And then he didn't go in because it's so out of rhythm. It's hard to take that low pass and put it up for a three-pointer. I don't want to, you know, take any blame off of Ellington, but there were some weird things going on. I thought some of his shots were a little out of the rhythm. But really, that to me, having the 5 assists and 2 steals when you know that you're not shooting well, says a lot, especially if you're Ellington, you have this starting position for right now.
Right.
If you're able to do that, that provides a reason to stay as a starter. Because even if you're not shooting well, you can at least affect the game positively in other ways.
Josh Richardson also had a pretty decent game overall, finishing with 10 points and 29 minutes, 4 of 7 overall, 2 of 3 from three-point range, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and 1 steal. Starting to work his way back, and you could see that. I think in the first half, he looked a little tentative, particularly as a ball handler, like he almost didn't want the ball in his hands. But I think I may have misread this, but I think some of the players were even kind of telling him, I think it was actually James Johnson, to be honest with you. I know we've talked about his leadership in the past, but I think that he kind of told Josh, no, bring the ball up. It's in your hands now. You initiate the offense. And that kind of got him going in the second half a little bit. And I think that translated into his shot making as well. So a good bounce back game for him considering he's missed so many games due to injury.
Between James Johnson, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, 35 points off the bench between those three guys.
Solid production.
Solid. I mean, Willie Reed was the other guy off the bench. He was a minus 10 in 5 minutes.
Just 1 point, right? Yeah.
And just 1 point. So not a great game for Willie Reed, but I don't think this was the matchup for him. I thought it was a tough matchup. I like Willie Reed. I just thought this was a tough matchup for him.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's all we have, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Let's wrap it up. All right. Thank you to SeatGeek, the friendliest and smartest way to buy and sell tickets. Use the promo code LOHEAT to get $20 after your first SeatGeek purchase. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. And if you aren't subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. And then go to iTunes and leave us a review. It helps our position on the iTunes charts, helps other people discover the show. And if you don't want to use the internet to help people discover the show, just tell a friend about the show. It's called Locked On Heat. They should subscribe too. All right. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Hey, it's Wes again. I wanted to tell you about the Monday Morning Heat Check. Would you enjoy getting a small email, a newsletter from me every Monday morning, where I share the best stories and digital content about the Miami Heat from the week before and for the week ahead? Just a little something to keep you up to speed. There'll be exclusive content from me as well, opinions, analysis, etc., and a few other surprises that I'm still working on along the way. Again, just a little something for you every Monday morning. So if that's something you're interested in, just go to tinyurl.com/Monday Morning Heat Check. That's tinyurl.com/Monday Morning Heat Check and drop in your email. It's that easy.